Henrik Palmgren is our guest tonight. In my opinion, a courageous young man who is a free thinker and a rational man and a pretty good observer. I think most of the people who have responded by email to me, by the way, you can send an email to me anytime you want, at John B, J-O-H-N, B as in Bravo, at coasttocoastam.com. I read them. I can't respond to all of them. There's a lot of them, but I'll respond to as many as I possibly can and get some of your thoughts on the air with Henrik. But yeah, nothing can change the shape of things to come. Yeah, that's for sure. But maybe not in the sense that those of the NWO might think it means. Because I'll tell you what, I'm going to oppose as long as I got my strength. Maybe even from the other side, if that's possible. I'll check it out then. And we'll cover a bunch more topics in rapid succession in the final hour of tonight's program with Henrik. The hidden roots of the European Union, quickly. I still want to talk to him about the robotification of mankind, the creation of the hive, although we have touched on that. And then the megalithic sites in Scandinavia and the rock carvings that depict an ancient catastrophic event, massive cyclical solar events, the positive outcome in the new era, spiritual technology, and maybe even some free energy. Stand by. This is going to be a brain buster because this is the Mothership, Coast to Coast, AM. Henrik, let's talk about food for a minute. What about this genetically modified organism and the organisms and this global seed vault in Svalbard? Global seed vault?
It's one of the most interesting aspects, I think, that have been happening in the last few years when it comes to, well, if you will, a potential evidence of the fact that the elite knows that something is coming, or ongoing at least. The seed vault up in Svalbard, which is in the North Sea, up over North Norway, way up there, is a very interesting place that has been financed by people like Bill Gates, his Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. There's many other people, nations involved in this, of course, but first, report I saw about this coming out, and it was, it's fairly close up to here, and there was a number of, Scandinavian governments involved in developing this. I really, my ears perked up, and I'm like, what is this? What is happening here? Where they're collecting tons of genetically diverse seeds. Why? It's up in the location is very interesting, of course. There's not many, people or, humans up there. It's very few people up on Svalbard, and they're really trying to, I believe, have a backup if something goes wrong on the Earth level, in the biosphere. We know that we've involuntarily been injected with genetically modified food at this point, organisms or plants and stuff like that. And there's, some people fear and estimate that it's basically beyond repair because these things are spreading all over the place. They're contaminating the normal food, crops and seeds that we have, and they're kind of taking over. They're like a virus, and they're developing these things all the time, new progress on this front. So I personally think that they are now in a position where they potentially could create a situation, again, which from our point of view, if people are not researched and well-read on this, would think that all of a sudden the global food, production would just begin to fail. We can talk about very basic parameters changing. We know that these genetically modified seeds are very, bad at taking, sudden changes in the climate, for instance. So if you have, yes, you might have a wheat, seed that grows really well for a specific region in an area, and it grows, better. You might think in the beginning than the regular wheat you had before. Oh, it's luscious, grows, quick and stuff. All you need to do is, spray Roundup on them, and it's already, it's like classified, herbicide in itself, the whole plant.
Right.
And then we eat this, great. Changes your intestines, changes everything. See, that's even also into this area of the robotification of mankind, the changing of our genetic structure. What is going on? What is happening? Do we know what we're doing? This is really dangerous stuff. We're meddling with the base components of life, our basic nourishment that we're getting right now, the plants we eat.
This seed vault up there, then these are the good seeds. So in other words, the people out there, the masses, they get the genetically modified stuff, and the seed vaults contain the real McCoy, the unmodified. Is that what the deal is?
That is the deal. I mean, these contain the, this is the genetic diverse seeds as well, which is very, very important. What that means is that you have seeds already kind of being made, if you will, in nature that are, you know, they have the genetic components within them, is that they can take different variations. So if something happens, you might have, you know, this seed works better if it's, you know, drier. This
gotcha.
Other seed here that comes from the same plant is better when it's, you know, wetter or whatever, something like that, warmer, temperature shifts. But when we now just make them really, really narrow again in terms of their genetic, you know, diversity, they have no diversity. So they might be really beneficial right now for the moment, but then, you know, we might lose them if something happens in the climate. We know the climate is changing all the time on top of that. So what they've done is that they've stored all these seeds away. I understand that they need to be replaced and stuff like that. There's a lot to it. But if you begin to, you know, look a little bit about some of the people who are, you know, behind the seed vault as well. Like I mentioned, Bill, you know, Gates, there's some really interesting people who have put money into this, who have, I think, interests in terms of, well, what should we call it, global depopulation, at least that's the rumor that we've heard. They might literally be creating a kind of a backup if things either go wrong, or possibly this is meant, you know, in a way, to go wrong on the surface of the earth. The biosphere here is going to change, is going to fail. And I'm not saying that every crop out there, of course, is genetically engineered. We have, still have a lot of good things out there, organically grown. But as we know, throughout the years now, as we've been tracking and watching this, we know that there is, you know, they're cracking down on people who even grow their own food. It's crazy. And, you know, contributing to this seed vault has been people like guy called Ken Street, and he's an Australian. They called him the Seed Hunter. Pretty interesting, because he goes down to Afghanistan, he goes down to Syria, some of these kind of places where they have, where it's believed anyway that they have the original seeds. I mean, the seeds themselves, this is actually a mystery about how they got. It seems from our perspective now, as we look at this, that they've been magically, almost genetically changed or engineered by 6,000 years ago. There's different, you know, theories about this. But the fact is that he was looking for those original kind of seeds, which they actually were, the plants we have now, that's what they, where they come from, basically. And so what has happened in the world is that we have all these volunteer workers going around the world and sharing these kind of genetically modified seeds. They think they're doing something good. So for instance, an, you know, a Syrian farmer or, you know, an Afghani farmer gets these, you know, seeds of the wheat or a chickpea or something like that, corn. Hey, use these instead. They're actually better. They're simple for you. So they begin using those, and slowly the diverse seeds actually are kind of ousted. They're slowly weaned out, in a sense. So this guy's traveling around looking for these original seeds, collecting them, and then placing them, you know, with a lot of other people around the world as well, in the global seed vault, so that they can have the original seeds before they were kind of, you know, massively engineered in one sense by mankind. We've begun to kind of change them so that we can have them for our digestive system. It's like they go hand in glove, these original, you know, seeds that were kind of tampered with slightly genetically, what we think, and our own digestive system. So it's like mankind ends up on the planet, and then we have magically the seeds that are fit for us to eat right next to it, almost, in a sense, you know. It's really interesting. So I'm kind of worried about this with the seed vault, John, about what they know, who's actually behind this. Is it all, you know, benevolent, or are they just doing something good because they, you know, they think it might go wrong? It's a backup. In that case, it's obviously good. But what if it's a plan to destabilize the global food supply? And hence, again, you've had one of these other depopulation scenarios actually play out for the most people as a as an accident. Whoops, we didn't know. But then they have the backup there ready in place.
Well, these crops are failing all over the place. These genetically modified seeds are, they're failing in India, they're failing in Africa, they're failing all over the place. Now, granted, we have 7 billion people here, but let's also not, we might as well take for granted, because it's a fact, that these depopulation efforts, ethnic and otherwise, have occurred over over all of our history. There are mad scientists out there. There are mad politicians. When mad politicians and mad scientists and then mad military people all get together, guess what? So maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea to, I mean, look, it's, there's a lot of things out there that, that it's better to have them and not need them than to need them and not have them. So it might not be a bad idea. In fact, it might be a very good idea to put a little stash of seeds that you have determined are not genetically modified seeds and put them away because you very well may need them one day. Just watch out for the tomato police who come to your house and say, well, you can't grow that. You can't have raw milk. You can't do this. You can't do that. Now, raw milk, that's kind of rough. I mean, there was this thing called milk sickness that was pretty rough. In fact, Abraham Lincoln's mother died of it, and it's a really rough way to check out. So pasteurization is a good thing. However, there's nothing wrong with growing your own food. We had victory gardens in World War II, and you know, people were together. The key to the new world order is dividing us. As long as we're divided, that means that we're not together. And if we're not together, they just pick us off individually. We don't talk to each other anymore. I recommend everybody go back and read Ray Bradbury's book, Fahrenheit 451. He laid out, this book was published in 1950, and it lays out exactly what happens when a society stops talking to the members. The members, they stop communicating. They don't talk on their front porches anymore. They're all subjected to the same big screen TVs on the wall, all looking at the same programming, and before long, they're all a part of the hive that you have described. Would you briefly give us the hidden roots of the European Union and just seg into the North European prehistory, the suppressed history, and then I want to go to your megalithic site. So tell us about the hidden roots of the European Union that supposedly our economy is now so inextricably linked to.
Yeah, wow, it's such a big topic, of course, but the main key, I think, for people to get a handle on when it comes to the creation of the European Union, because we need to look at the roots to find out what was the reason why it was created. If we can find out some of that stuff, maybe we can understand how it's operating, what the purpose of it is, basically. The lie that we hear about the creation of the European Union is basically that after the Second World War, the European countries were so sick of it, after having this Europe is a traumatized continent in that sense. There's been so much war and bloodshed here bombs going off everywhere, and we've had people who obviously, understandably, wanted out. They fled. I mean, with the feudalist systems that were in place here, I totally understand why, some of my prehistory neighbors or whatever you want to call them up here, fled to Minnesota and whatever they went. You know what I mean? They wanted to get out. I understand that. And again, if we go back to the Second World War, we hear this excuse, that, okay, we need to have something in place which can prevent this from happening again in the future. The same reason is what we get, why we get the League of Nations, which later turned into the United Nations. But the fact is that the seeds again for the European movement was planted long before that. And what people need to research, a guy is called Richard Coudenhove Kalergi, and this is he was a count. Back in 1923, he wrote a book called Pan Europa, and he's actually one of the first guys who kind of initiated a movement to bring all of the European continent together again. And interestingly enough, he worked very close to, with Otto von Habsburg, which is obviously one of the old families that controlled the Holy Roman Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire there for a while. And he was actually the last one alive to do that. And he died a few years ago. And I think the reins of the Habsburg house was left over to one of his sons. But what's interesting there is that his sons and one of his daughters too, or if he had two, have actually worked actively in different countries in Europe. We have one here in Sweden, his daughter, I forget her name now, but she worked to actively promote in the parliament here, the European kind of ideals and things like that. And she even recommended that we side by side with the Swedish flag actually put up a European flag to get the people to identify with their European heritage and all that, this kind of stuff, So they've actually been running this for a long time, and the ideas there and the plans were there for a long time. And people, I think, need to look into. I mean, there's something not time to address all the things, the ideologies of Coudenhove Kalergi, but people need to research that guy. look into him and his ideas and how he worked together with the Habsburg family. And he himself was from a, you know, Byzantine Venetian royalty family. He had some Greek blood in there too, and he was kind of considered to be like a, you know, a very multicultural individual, and hence therefore he was better suited to actually kind of, you know, push these ideas on Europe, because they also want to kind of create a European person in that sense and not have the nations left anymore. So he even has this line where he said he envisioned that the future Europeans are going to be a mixed race like the ancient Egyptians, which is right. A very interesting comment in that sense, that he actually goes back to those kind of ancient ideas of trying to, you know, create this kind of going back to the one of the original kind of foundations of human civilization in that sense, and they want to see that kind of reemerge again and create that again. So he's probably one of the most important, you know, guys that people need to be aware of. But there's so many other references to the fact that they've been trying to establish the Roman Empire once again. And the, I mean, if it wasn't bad enough in Sweden, now we have the European tyranny coming on top of that. It's just amazing when you think about it, and the fact that they're shoving us into the, you know, a debt-based economy with the EMS. They can now demand money from the different nations around Europe on 7 days' notice without any kind of recall. And we're talking, you know, billions of euros in total here. We're being drained under the European Union completely, and the bureaucracy is just unbelievable. And talk about control of the farm industry, by the way, as well. That's one of the first things they actually did when the European Union started coming in. They were like measuring, you know, the angle of a cucumber. It has to be straight in order for it to be called and classified a cucumber. Same thing with the banana. You know, what kind of bend does it have? All kinds of weird things like this. Very nitpicking in the smallest little details. Classification. It's almost like, is there a human being that is meant to understand this, or is it a robot that doesn't have a thinking process? You know what I mean? It's hilarious when you look at it.
Oh boy. Well, all right then. Tell us about. Let's spend. I'll tell you what. We have figured out that there is in fact a plan to reduce the population. It's obvious. Oh, by the way, Bill Gates has developed a system where we can drink human waste material, the bioeffluents, and we can recycle all that stuff and actually sustain ourselves with it. I suggest Mr. Gates and Mrs. Gates go first, okay? And let us know how that works out for you. I may try it later if you live. Let's spend the rest of the program talking about these megalithic sites in Scandinavia, the rock carvings that depicted the ancient catastrophic event, and these massive cyclical solar outbreaks. Now, we don't have very much time with this because you have so much information, and I just wish we had 8 hours with this. But we've got like less than 2 minutes before we have to take another break, which, of course, we have to do. But very quickly, what about these massive solar outbreaks? Now, there are demands that we've got to turn these global warming skeptics around. It's like, yes, the planet's heating, just not for the reasons that you say it is. You can't control the sun. What are your thoughts on the solar outbreaks very quickly before? And when you hear the music, you know we're going to have to break. So let's talk about the solar cycles.
Sure, absolutely. This is really a worrying aspect, of course. We have mythological records going back, apparently, if we read them right, of you know, the Mayans and people like that are talking about different waves of the sun, or that we're moving in from the fourth to the fifth sun, or, you know, for them a little bit earlier, they went from the third to the fourth. This is something which is, you know, in the record, if we can read it right. It's in the mythological record as well. As I said, some of the depiction, I think, from around the world is actually describing a plasma event, a discharge that happens, you know, when we have massive electrical you know, things coming in that sense. We can talk a little bit more about that later, the details of that. But we've had some guests, you know, on our program talking about this quite a bit lately. And it's a really worrying scenario if it's true.
Okay, let's hold it right there, my friend. I'm sorry to do it to you, because I'm telling you everybody's liking this, and I know I am. So we'll be right back with Henrik Palmgren, and we'll carry on our singular discussion right here on Coast to Coast AM. Do stay with us. I want to get back as quickly as possible to Henrik Palmgren, redicecreations.com, and also Henrik with a K, Palmgren.com. So let's get this last little two-minute break taken care of, and let's resume our conversation with him as quickly as we can on Coast to Coast AM. Hang in there. Okay, Henrik, so we do have historical record of massive solar outbreak before, but obviously civilization and sort of individuals that later went on to reform civilization survived. So I guess if it happened once and it was survivable, I guess maybe it could happen again and it'll be survivable, or what do you think? Just a bigger mess?
I think everything is survivable in one sense or another. If we don't have a major you know catastrophe, that this could happen, you know, anytime. We're out here in the middle of space. We don't know what's going on. Things are really, you know, from our perspective, maybe we think everything is stable, but the more and more we look into prehistory, we're beginning to notice that it seems like we have these cyclical catastrophes, you know. And to make an example, back in 2003, we had a 28 class flare, one of these coronal mass ejections.
And it was a big one.
It's a big one. It's just one of the biggest we've recorded since we began recording. This was in November in 2003. But the fact is, we've had other events in you know, further back in history that were recorded, like the Carrington event of 1859, where we had, you know, fires erupting, consequently telegraph lines that were in place at this point went down. The fact is that we obviously have a very different world today than back in 1859. We have lots of things, our planet is covered with the different grids in a way of telephone lines, electrical lines, and all these things. And they would obviously act like big antennas in a sense when we have a lot of this energy coming in. So if possible, if we get a direct hit in a sense from one of these major events, we don't even know what the Carrington event, what level that was on when it comes to the X classification we have. It was probably, you know, off the scale. Can't even know what that was. But if that would happen today, we get a big enough hit, it would fry our, you know, the big transformers that we have. All this, you know, the build up of energy in the system would fry these, in a sense, sensitive components that we have in our precious centralized electrical grid. The whole system would go down. Our old stable, you know, systems, in a sense, that we had are now being scrapped even, and we're moving even further into new sensitive, these kind of delicate, even digital systems with kind of weaker and smaller, more fragile components.
Yes.
Which is a mistake in my view, you know. We had, we talked recently with a guy, Matt Stein, who looked at the cyclical patterns and, you know, actually argued that we are overdue for another big burst in that sense from the sun. We don't know when this could happen. The fact is, we just know that it has happened in the past and it could happen again. And it's just very interesting that it doesn't seem, in a time like this when the economy is bad, that we're taking the necessary precautions to try to do what we can, at least to prevent this. There are certain technologies in place. Allegedly, you could change or upgrade the transformators and you know, do certain things with them. I know they're expensive and stuff like that as well, but the potential, what we're looking at, the potential what-if scenario is, I mean, if you think Fukushima was bad, if this thing's hit and all the electrical systems goes down, sure, we have backup generators for the majority of the nuclear power plants around the world. And they also run on, you know, they have diesel trucks standing by ready to come out in case anything happens. But could even be such a bad situation that it develops on the Earth's surface into some kind of Mad Max scenario, in a sense, meaning that gas, diesel would be precious commodity items. So would these trucks that are waiting to go on standby make it all the way to these, you know, nuclear power plants that are waiting? I mean, Matt Stein argued that we're potentially could be looking at a situation of, 400 Chernobyls, he called it. And I mean, it's really worrying.
You know, the thing about it is, though, Henrik, it seems to me that it's human nature to fear that if we're confronted with an emergency like that, a global emergency, that we would just descend into chaos. That's what we fear. So that's what we dwell on. But you know what? It seems to me that human nature has a very positive side to it as well. I mean, look when Joplin, Missouri? Was it Joplin, Missouri that got just smashed by this massive storm? And they all came together and helped each other. It's like there's nothing that'll bring people together like everybody suffering equally. However, I don't think that that should be an excuse to usher in a new world order. So let me ask you this. Apart from a situation like that, which is totally beyond our control, only like the cleaning up is somewhat within our control, what is the positive outcome? What about mankind's awakening in the new era?
Well, exactly. It's a really good point because it's not all about fear-mongering. This is kind of goes to the heart of the matter that I tried to explain a little bit earlier. I think that when mankind, and I agree with you 100%, when we are kind of pushed up against the wall, in a sense, we face horrible scenarios or something has happened, which is, well, maybe not traumatic only, but obviously, you know, physically upsetting for us in that sense that we lose our comfort zone. That is when mankind rises to the occasion. And again, just to briefly tie back, that was one of the things that I was trying to kind of explain a little bit earlier when it comes to a really secure and padded type of society, that things tend to stagnate in that. And in a weird kind of quirk of human nature, it's almost like we need to not suffer. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying we need to experience challenges in order to try harder. That's the incentive for us to try to, for instance, come up with a new technology, move into free technology, move away from this nuclear fuel. If everything is just nice and dandy and nothing is, you know, we don't fear anything, we're going to sit around and just do nothing in that sense. And we need something that spurs us into the direction of looking at newer things, safer things, and cleaner things as well. So I'm really hopeful that, I mean, in a best case scenario, in a sense, we get something that happens that shakes up humanity enough for us to wake up and realize what a dire situation we are in, but not bad enough to completely wipe us out, you know?
Larry, well, let me ask you this. Do you put any stock or have you given any consideration or even familiar with the little Japanese princess that predicted 3 days of darkness and everything was going to get really weird all over the world in this coming December of 2012? Did you hear all that stuff? She was in contact with aliens and they told her, yeah, there's going to be 72 hours of darkness and things are going to get real weird. And then I don't remember what she said was going to happen after the 3 days of darkness. I was pretty much fixated on that.
Yeah, I did hear about that actually. And you know, who knows, that might be true. She might have some inside information. I quickly, when I heard about it though, I just looked a little bit at the background, and it was obvious to me that she was promoting this Pythagoras conference or whatever. And the fact is that I did a little rudimentary research, and apparently she is not even related to the Japanese, you know, royal family over there. But this was just a claim that she threw out to get kind of credibility and stuff. Of course, that doesn't mean, I mean, I'm not shooting the messenger here. That doesn't mean that what she's talking about is not a reality or whatever. Anything could happen. It just seemed like kind of a mishmash of different messages being sent. And again, I think we need to be careful in a sense, in terms of what we adopt and what we believe. And I always try to, you know, advocate that try to also, you know, have an open mind, but not so open that your brain falls out, you know, try to have a rational, you know, approach to these things. So of course, anything could happen. Anything's possible. We don't know. We are truly in the unknown here, but at the same time, we shouldn't just run with our emotional feelings all the time either. We should use our intuition, I believe. But mankind has, you know, this is provable, has been manipulated by emotional appeal forever in that sense.
That's so, the best way to do it.
Exactly. That really is how they're speaking to us and how we are manipulated. So we just need to be aware of that, I think. And there's a lot of hype and hoopla around, you know, 2012. And of course, it's going to be interesting to see if anything happens in December the 21st. I personally don't see it that way. I don't see that one single event, you know, but again, if it's, are we talking about a solar storm? Are we talking about something shutting down the grid and hence we have those, you know, 3 days or 3 nights of darkness? It's kind of interesting how the human subconscious work and even the fact that it seems to be a flow of energy, the muse that mankind taps into when it comes to creativity and things like that, that we can see a certain set of predictable scenarios in even our entertainment, in our movies and TV. And I don't think that's only attributed to the fact that we have insiders there working. I think it's also more than that. At least I know that as a musician, you tap into something when you are in the creative flow. You just, you don't know what it is, but you're kind of along for the ride almost. You know, it's almost like you're used as a vessel for the creative force in a sense, which is really interesting. It's about harnessing that. So I think that even when mankind makes a movie or what have you, TV show, there's certain things, certain messages that are going to flip out, maybe with the aid of our subconscious in a sense, in these television series. The message is going to come out there one way or another. And if we're intelligent, if we're subtle enough and can pick up on these things, maybe they do speak to us all the time. Maybe our environment around us speak to us all the time as well. I mean, we know, for instance, just to make, you know, an example to this, the tsunami in Sumatra back in 2004, all the animals took off before, and there's just human beings standing around and like, oh, great, now we can go down and pick up a fish, you know, from all the water that had receded in a way. But the animals are in touch with something else, you know, and we're cut off from that in a sense. And I think it's about returning back to listening to that voice in a sense that is there, that's communicable. But if mankind is being turned into a robot in a sense, which I've been arguing with all these different things, everything from societal change, economic, you know, and social changes, to technological, to genetically modified seeds, we're being moved, I believe, further and further away from these natural components within our environment that we're, you know, which is customary. And it doesn't mean that I'm a Luddite. It doesn't mean we should shut down everything or use technology. It's just, again, it's the balance between these worlds that is necessary, I believe, for our, you know, our survival and for us to actually, you know, progress forward. It's incredibly important.
Well, that's that thing about run your technology or your technology will run you. And Terry just sent an email and reminded me of something that I forgot to ask you a while ago, and I think it's kind of important. It's just jumping back just a little bit. Is there any plan to do the old chip implantation in people in Sweden, or is it already underway, or is it even under discussion?
Excuse me, can you read that one more time? Sorry.
Yeah, the chip implantation. You know, the information, medical history, you know, a positive identification is popping a chip into people that can be read by a scanner. Is there any of that going on in Sweden?
There sure is. I hear undercurrents of this all the time, and I haven't actually been... it's been very tricky for me to find reliable information. I know that it's done by the transhumanists, in one sense, are working on this. Some of them are Swedes, like Anders Sandberg. He's working, I forget which universities he's working with right now. And there's been a, you know, a technological advancement actually in Sweden on the implantable microchip that took place back in the 70s. This much I do know. And there has been... See, again, I'm back to this point that a lot of things are spearheaded in this country, under the surface, things that people do not know. And I mean, obviously, we know about, you know, Delgado. He did his experiments with, you know, stopping the raging bull in its tracks with a microchip implant. That's kind of, as far as I understand, it's kind of in the same line of research that the Swedes did, but they actually did it on human subjects in that case. Now, I haven't heard too much of this going on today. I've been struggling. I hear claims from some people who claim that they've been part of this. It's very difficult. Again, I try to find a balance between what's just, you know, hearsay and just, you know, people who are trying to get the attention or and what actually is going on. So this is actually another component of things that I'm definitely going to look into more and research and see if there's anything to this. There's just so many different aspects and layers to, you know, the things I've been looking into, but I mean, that's definitely in there, but among one of the big, you know, points that we definitely need to find out. But I mean, at this point, I don't even know if we need to go that far. We do know that DARPA has developed some, you know, incredible things. And I wouldn't be surprised if, sure, Sweden spearheaded it, but they might have actually turned over some of the, you know, some of the material even over to other countries or other research groups that could take it up further and actually, you know, go to the full extent. But again, not going to deny it. There's tons of things happening in this country that we have, you know, no clue about whatsoever.
We're down the last few minutes of our visit together tonight, my brother. Tell us about spiritual technology, will you?
Absolutely. This is, again, one of the goes in line with kind of what I mentioned before earlier. It goes into the aspect of free energy, of actually beginning to tap into something which is a more natural form of technology. I think that the cell phone, for instance, is an expression of mankind's desire to communicate, you know, with each other in a sense at will. Maybe not an open link all the time, but let's say you can literally dial somebody with telepathy, tap into that know, etheric field that I believe exists there. That's what I mean with spiritual technology. And there's a danger that we might get sidetracked with the current material technology that we do have, that we let these things take over instead of us actually developing these components that I do believe that we have within us, which entails, you know, telepathy as a representation of the cell phone, or the internet, to the fact that we can actually tap into the real kind of global mind, if you will, that I believe is out there. Those things we could get sidetracked. And hopefully, John, I think we might go into a period right now where these things, these ideas, inspirations for these kinds of things will truly and really dawn on mankind. I mean, it's been, you know, said before many times that we're entering into an interesting period when it comes to even, you know, the positions of the planet, if you want to take that approach. And if you believe that, you know, with Neptune and Uranus and Pluto even, mankind is moving into a different type of quality of the energies that are surrounding us. I think everybody feels that in one way or another right now. It's like a big squeeze, and we're all being squeezed in different ways, in a sense that we're being you know, pushed up against that wall in order to both examine ourselves, to try to understand ourselves, but to also try to progress and advance. And that's why I think the world overall is in such an upheaval right now. It's a lot of bleep that's hitting the fan, in a sense. But at the same time, in that chaotic time, I think there's great potential for the human being to truly and really advance into something new that we haven't seen before. And this entails things like free energy devices and this kind of spiritual components of mankind truly being hardwired and tapped into some of the great things out there. So overall, you know, I'm positive. I don't mean to come here and bring a message of doom or what have you. So I believe and I think that we can focus on the things that we need to do, but point out the problems. So we know what those are, so we can avoid them and then choose the right path to go.
You're absolutely right, and we're just about out of time here. Your websites are Red Ice Creations, plural.com, and Henrik, H-E-N-R-I-K, Palmgren, P-A-L-M-G-R-E-N, Henrik Palmgren, Palmgren.com. It has been such a pleasure to talk to you tonight, and I'm going to check in with you again for another long run between now and December 21, 2012, okay?
Sounds good, John. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot.
This is a real treat.
Thanks so much for the warning. Ladies and gentlemen, remember, first they distract you, then it follows they confuse you, then they isolate you, and then you have a choice. Join the hive or be neutralized. Or you prepare, you protect, and when necessary, you resist. Remember, if you look back far enough, you can see your future. Meet me next week at the usual undisclosable location. Until next Saturday night and beyond, be well and good night.